Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. So, there we are then. I told you it would be a waste of time. I told you there wasn't any need to go. I said it was a pointless exercise. If only the government listened to me, we could have all saved a bucket load of money on the world's most expensive fish supper. According to reports this morning, Boris Johnson and Ursula von der Leyen, as I say, shared scallops, pumpkin soup and steamed turbot as they discussed how they couldn't agree on anything. Predictably, the papers this morning are full of red herring, scouse mackerel, smoked kippers, souse mackerel that should be, and people having had their chips. And so now, guess what? There's another deadline on Sunday. This morning, I'm delighted to say I'm joined in the studio by Baroness Buckley, a.k.a. Claire Fox, former MEP for the Brexit Party, now with Reform UK. She's going to have plenty to say on all sorts of things, including the devastating lockdown and its effects on business, hospitality and the pub industry. If you've got questions for her, then please let us know. 0344 499 1000. We'll also be talking to Robin Schoenhofer, former newsreader here at Talk Towers, who's now working in the NHS. She got the COVID vaccine yesterday. We'll find out how she's feeling. And we're joined by Helen Dale, lawyer, author and commentator, with her take on the week and her view on the state of things. And as the row over at Sky News continues to grow, we'll be checking in with media expert Mark Bukowski about the extraordinary development that Adam Bolton has now thrown Kay Burley right under the bus and called into question the credibility of Sky News. Yeah, I know. It's funny, isn't it? Plus, the Donna Harvey's reporting in from California with the latest on the election row and Hunter Biden's taxes. Plus, we're talking space as Elon Musk's latest mission ends in a fireball crash. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Welcome to Claire Fox, who is the first guest I think we've had in the studio for quite some time. Claire, very good morning to you.
So exciting to be in a studio and be live.
Isn't it?
It's great to be on your show,
isn't it? Listen, well, we've had you on the show, I think, only once before.
Yeah.
And we finally met a few weeks ago, didn't we? And we're both kind of astonished at the fact that it hadn't happened sooner. I'm not quite sure what was going on there. But listen, you're here. It's great to see you. You're now, of course, a member of the House of Lords. You'll be going there later on. I guess we should kick off with what happened last night, or what didn't happen last night, over in Fish Supper Land, over in Brussels, where I knew nothing would happen, and sure enough, nothing did.
No, nothing did, but it symbolically, sadly, indicates, if you want, that the UK really desperately wants a deal. And I think that the danger is that all the optics are going over to Brussels, asking for a deal. I don't know if you saw the first encounter between Boris Johnson and von der Leyen, but she basically told him that he was standing too close. He said social distancing.
Right.
And then he asked her, shall I put my mask on?
Right.
And so on. And it just
it's
felt
awkward,
so humiliating and difficult.
Right.
So I think that's one of my problems. I do need to correct something that you said, which was you said that I was in Reform UK, which I'm not.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
I'm an independent. I'm interested in all these new parties springing up left, right and centre, because I do think, and this is the link, I do think that as people watch what's happening both with COVID and Brexit, the mainstream parties do have a reputational problem, which is that people will be looking around for some new alternatives.
No, they really do.
I can stay independent because I'm in the House of Lords, I can do what I want. But I do understand that there's a desire for shaking things up because we're fed up.
Well, there is. And I mean, as the Brexit Party shook things up, and I mean, I'm always amused by people who say, oh, well, Nigel Farage has never really won an election. Well, his name may not have won an election as an MP, but he's won elections after elections in the European Parliament. He's also happened to change the face of British politics by making us leave the European Union, or making that possible. And I take it that, I suppose, everybody just assumes that if you were in the Brexit Party, you'll be in the Reform Party, but I guess that doesn't necessarily
isn't. I think that you know, Brexit, well, and it's back to those talks last night. Brexit was an extraordinary one-off, wasn't it?
Mm.
That's the point about it.
Yes.
So somebody like me, he would probably never have been on a platform with Nigel Farage one way or another. But because Brexit mattered so much, because a democratic vote was being sold out, lots of us said, well, we'll stand for this party for this one-off.
Yes.
I think it's different when you're setting up a long-term political
party. And it was a broad church
party.
Of very different
very
beliefs,
broad church.
It?
And that was what Brexit was like. So
yeah.
One of the things, I suppose, that concerns me, I spent the last, you know, couple of days in the House of Lords debating the internal market bill, and Michael Gove has come back and basically said, oh, it's all right, you know, we can drop part five, which was the contentious parts of the internal market bill, without going into the boring technicalities of it. That was the bit which everybody said was breaking international law. That was the bit which the government themselves said was necessary to make sure that a pretty shoddy withdrawal agreement did not allow, via Northern Ireland, the EU to carry on having jurisdiction
right.
and an assault on sovereignty. And the fact that Michael Gove come back and say, oh, I've sorted it all out because I've had a chat,
yeah.
is nerve-wracking. Some of us had gone on the line defending the government breaking this international law
yes.
on the basis that we wanted to honour the promise to the electorate, never mind honouring international rules, so that domestic law could be made at home.
Right.
And then for them to come back, as I said yesterday in the House of Lords, it felt like being marched up the hill and marched back down again. So,
but that is kind of the sort of the main, I would say, characteristic, isn't it, of Boris Johnson's leadership? He seems to have absolutely no principles whatsoever. He seems to have no care about just dumping something if it doesn't apparently fit with the narrative today, even though it did yesterday. And whatever he promises you, you just think, well, I don't believe that, because tomorrow you're going to say something else.
Well, the thing that's really disconcerting is, you want to say that because he was elected with this massive swing from Red Wall voters in particular to get Brexit done, and really to be the person who would go down historically as delivering Brexit, that even he, even now, could not possibly sell that out. But because we've sat through the COVID 9 months,
yeah.
and the man who is associated vaguely with a bit of libertarianism, who's always said he was anti-nanny state, always said that all those public health measures were a nonsense, and we have just gone through the last 9 months,
right.
I think we can all sit there and go, if I thought possibly that Boris Johnson might stick to his word to the British people and really not compromise with the EU on sovereignty and democratic accountability, I don't feel like that confident
now. Really, no, it really doesn't feel like that, does it? Because it does seem as though he's literally willing to do almost anything. And I'm not even sure if it's to remain popular, because I think that ship has flown, or whatever ships do, a long time ago, you know. And talking of lockdown, I mean, we were saying just before the show that there is this sort of sense that they're not quite there yet. They still don't see what everybody else in the country seems to see, which is that, you know, we should be doing something different. We need to lift ourselves out of this economic gloom.
Well, I absolutely agree with you on this, and I know that you've been very, you know, outspoken, but it's important that these questions are raised. The thing that you can really get nervous about is when lots of excitement around vaccines emerges this week, and I'm a great enthusiast for scientific medical breakthroughs like vaccinations.
Yeah.
When people say they've done it very quick, I always say, well, that's because it usually takes them so long.
Right.
There's too many regulations usually
yes.
in terms of making
medicine.
I mean,
we should be happy about that rather
we should be
than
excited.
Worried about it.
But you are still allowed as a citizen to ask, well, is it safe?
Yeah.
Or, you know, was it a bit quick?
Right.
Or can I not take it? And immediately there's been a clampdown in terms of free speech on that. Anti-vaxxers
right.
thrown at you, etc., etc. But the worst bit is when you get somebody like Whitty saying, well, of course we've got the vaccine, but I don't want anyone to imagine that things are going to go back to normal.
Right.
Because even though you might have the vaccine, we still want you to social distance. We still
yeah.
want you to be aware of the fact you need to wear masks all the time. Nothing will go. So then you think, actually, are you now saying that even though I think you've gone the wrong way, on your own strategy, it was let's get a vaccine, then we can go back to normal. Now we've got the vaccine, and they're saying we're not going to go back to normal.
Well, that's what they were saying. They were telling us all that, you know, we won't be able to get back to normal until we get the vaccine. Now we get the vaccine, it doesn't stop you getting it. It doesn't stop you spreading it. And if you get told to self-isolate, you still have to.
And so it's always better safe than never.
Right.
Better safe than sorry. But in this such a precautionary way, and the balance of risks, and this has always been the argument you put forward, which is, COVID is one of the serious challenges this country and the world faces.
Yeah.
But there are others.
Of course.
And you always have to think that.
Saying that he was nervous about the next 3 months. And I actually put a tweet out yesterday saying, this is a bloke who'd be nervous if he found some frost on the front of his car. You know, I mean, this is a bloke who's just nervous generally. You know, most of us are not like that. Most of us, you know, have had children and worried about them. But it doesn't mean you don't let them out of your sight. You know, they go on school holidays. Sometimes terrible things happen. Sometimes you have to grieve for loved ones who have died. For whatever reason, people have accidents, you know, people get terrible diseases. You can't stop all that, and you can't suddenly pretend that we can legislate to stop it.
But we've also been in a situation where this, even at the worst case scenario of what this virus has threatened, and I think it's been overstated, and it is a serious threat to the vulnerable, but it is less of a threat, certainly mortally, to most people. But even if you go along with that, and there's different views on how serious or not the pandemic is, the main thing is that you have to then say, okay, we've got this serious virus. What can we do to live and mitigate against people dying of it that does not destroy the lives of everybody and destroy and rip up society for decades, generations? But they won't say that.
Because I always find it fascinating when I talk to people who ring in. We get a lot of people, you've probably heard them on here, hoteliers, pub owners, you know, people in the business of tourism, who are just absolutely beside themselves. They don't know how long, much longer they can go on for. Some of them will never be able to succeed with their businesses. Some of them just will have to collapse into you know, destitution practically.
Yeah, so the hospitality industry has been particularly viciously affected by this, because in a way I think, even despite the fact that there's no evidence that the hospitality industry or, you know, that going to the pub is where it's spreading, I think we've gathered that, you know, it spreads in hospitals,
funnily enough.
You know, and you know, old people's homes, care homes rather, where actually we've neglected them in many ways. Lots of children are passing it on to each other at schools. That's not the end of the world, by the way. We're not setting a panic.
But that's one of the things that is the cause, for example, in London, of infection rates apparently in the last week or so going up.
Yeah, but cases, of course, and infections are not the same, as we know, as a serious threat. But nonetheless, that's it. But it's not pubs. But the other thing about the pub trip, people will constantly do this thing when you talk about hospitality. They're like, oh, you just want to go and get drunk with your mates.
It's ridiculous.
In the court. You know, we were facing this very serious thing. There's a number of things. One is, part of being human, part of a society, is our capacity to mix and mingle, talk, socialise. That conviviality is what makes it part of being worth living, right? And it's also where you chat. You actually can challenge the anti-vaxxer in the room because you're having an argument.
Right.
It's where you swap stories, where you actually are part of society, the public sphere.
Yeah.
And they've closed down the public sphere. We're just not allowed to do it. But there's another side, which is, we had this debate in the House of Lords on evictions and homelessness. So the government have expanded or extended the length of time that you can't be evicted until January.
Right.
You know, that's great, because the last thing you want is people to be homeless in the midst of this. But there's a number of problems with it. They're doing this like they're doing some kind of benevolent favour to everyone. Related to hospitality is, it's said that 30 to 40% of the new homeless are from the hospitality trade, because a lot of their jobs were associated with the home, or they were in precarious living. You know, young people working in pubs and so on, maybe all
just
sleeping on each other's
couch,
and et cetera, et cetera. They're going to be homeless.
Right.
So the government kind of can be benevolent and say, well, we'll make sure you're not, and they are kicking debt down the line.
Right.
And they are making, you know, the
Yeah, but that
person,
in the end is not a long-term strategy,
that's no,
is it?
But also, they created it. So I said, I've got a better strategy for stopping people being evicted, which is, end the lockdowns.
Yeah.
Because actually what let you're doing is let people go to work.
Yeah. Let people and, earn money, which is what they want to do, which is good for them anyway, much better than sitting at home on your backside wondering if you'll ever get a job again. Because, I mean, I've got a 16-year-old son, for example, who is not in any way, shape or form in a desperate situation. But he can't even get a job at the weekends because there's literally nothing to do.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Because that's the other thing is the opposition benches who drive me mad. You know, the Labour Party and the Lib Dems and the Greens and everyone else, their solution is always, can people have more money to help them?
Yeah.
And you think, you know what? You are missing what all this means. People don't just work for money. Mm. I mean, obviously, you need to earn a living. But also, it's what you do. It's as you go out into the world. This idea that if you've got a bit of money, you're all right.
Yeah.
People are actually having their... it's harder. They're being demobilised. Mm. They're basically being told it's not worth doing anything.
No.
Stay at home.
And guess what? All the people. I mean, you made this. You know, you made this point on Question Time about the private sector as well. There, you know, where everybody's going. Oh, let's clap the nurses. Let's clap the public sector. Isn't it great? I used to say to my kids at the weekends, you know, why don't you clap me? I've been working all week. You know, what are you doing for me? You know, the bottom line is that the people in the private sector have been holding it together. People have been working in supermarkets, driving vans, driving lorries, driving taxis, you know, and none of them get anything, really.
Exactly.
I speak to taxi drivers who are literally on their uppers and, you know, in desperate straits because they made 10 quid instead of 100 quid.
I know. The private sector, public sector, I mean, you know, what I was objecting to there was when it was basically being argued that public sector workers were particularly heroic and therefore they deserved a pay rise.
Yeah.
And I was saying, well, we all deserve a pay rise, but none of us are going to get it, because we're almost bankrupt at this rate, right? But then why highlight that group? It's just so divisive. The thing about the private sector is whenever you say private sector, people immediately kind of go big banks, corporate sector, profits.
Right.
And it's like, no. No. It's the Deliveroo driver.
Yes.
It's the taxi guy. Mm. It's the person with the, you know, with the shop that you've just closed down. I said nail bars and hairdressers. And somebody said, oh, you know, what about... And it's like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
There are loads and loads of young women who have been entrepreneurial enough to set themselves up in little businesses.
Yeah.
Absolutely smashed to smithereens their hopes, their aspirations. And you can't replace the fact that people, you know, save up, you know, they have life savings or they've saved up, they've done it just to open a little shop or to do something that they've always wanted to do. And they've now spent all that.
Yeah.
They've everything's
run out.
Any
rainy day money's gone, yeah.
Absolutely. And that's like a lot of the pub and hospitality people, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
they might have had a bit of savings, but they put it all in, redoing up so that their establishments are COVID safe.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any difference. Mm. They've still closed them down in Tier 3, made it impossible to meet in Tier 2. What's the point of that?
And guess what? When they keep saying, on the other hand, all infection rates are going up, so you're going, well, what's the point of what you're doing then? If you're doing what you're doing and infection rates are still going up, you might as well not be doing it, mind you.
Exactly. It becomes so irrational.
Yeah, it's counterintuitive, isn't it?
That you want to scream. And I understand, I get frustrated by... the constant conspiratorial, you know, chat of what's really going on and you know, all these WhatsApp
the great
groups,
reset.
Everyone, the great reset and all that. Yeah. Drives me mad. Because, you know, if only it were a plan, then you kind of like think something good was
they're
that.
Not that clever.
I'm afraid. But I do understand that partly this is a consequence of looking out and thinking there must be a plan because it just doesn't make any sense.
No.
Don't tell me that they're just going from pill. But I literally think that they. They, if you sit in the morning and all that you judge the success of your life is on whether COVID cases are going up or down, then you get set in that mindset and that's all that they're thinking about. I'm actually from Wales, Buckley, Baroness Buckley. I'm from Buckley, North Wales.
Don't talk about Wales on this show. Mark Drakeford is trying trying to kill Wales, isn't he?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, when I did Question Time, I was on with the Labour administration. It was from Wales with the Swansea audience. Oh my God. You know, like what I was going to say was that all of them. So you can't say it's Boris Johnson and the Tories.
No.
Because you've got Mark Drakeford and the Labour Party, who's gone completely.
Yeah.
He's got a 6 o'clock curfew and no alcohol in pubs.
Unbelievable.
I mean, you can't
Nicola
make that
Sturgeon's
bit up.
The same. I mean, they can't get a drink in Scotland.
Exactly. So you've basically got an indication of the fact that it's the political establishment. It's not a party political thing.
No.
There's no alternative thinking going on at all. And actually, the only good thing that you can say is that because we've all seen this although it's not the majority, a substantial minority of people are, as it were, thinking, when things go back to normal, I'm not having this anymore. Because I've started to see things. I've started to realise that being told how to live my life, you know, every micromanaged, you know, how many drinks I have, what my mates, who my mates...
What I'm allowed to do.
Exactly, all of this. You know, let's embrace freedom and let's get rid of this technocratic elite that treats us like this. And I do think that there might be some room for a burgeoning of debate and discussion.
Let's
and a
hope
new
so.
Hope.
But I hope so. We've only got about a minute left, I'm afraid, Claire. But let's talk a little bit, just briefly, about the free speech issue, because there is a problem, particularly on some social media outlets now, where they're basically shutting stuff down and saying, you can't talk about that, you can't interview that person, you can't say that.
Absolutely frightening how interventionist social media are at deciding. They're like the truth sayers, you know?
Yeah.
And they literally will say, that is misinformation. You're not allowed to say it. It doesn't matter whether it is or it isn't.
Right.
How dare
they? But
they've
decided.
How dare
yeah, I know.
They?
Who gave them the right?
But the Labour Party recently lobbied the government that it should be illegal for those things not to be censored. Mm. So you've got an opposition who wants explicit government censorship of material on COVID. But good news this week, Cambridge University were about to introduce a new thing which said that you had to respect everyone. Mm. If not, you were in trouble. I thought it was going to get through. Massively defeated yesterday. Now you have to tolerate other views, not respect them.
Yes.
If you respect them, it means you're not allowed to argue with
them. Yes.
So at least a bit of free speech good news this week. Cambridge University might not be where we're all going to or where all the listeners have a particular interest. But when a university like that is forced to declare in favour of free speech, it's good for all of us.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Well, delightful to see you. Thank you so much. It went absolutely so quickly. We didn't get to everything we wanted to talk about. Baroness Buckley. It says Baroness Fox of Buckley.
Is it Baroness Fox of Buckley? I mean, okay. Who knows? Claire, to the rest of you.
Do you get people curtsying to you now?
No, but it is weird in the House of Lords when, you know, you kind of go in and some, you know, the staff are brilliant, by the way.
Yeah.
And they go, good morning, Lady Fox. And
wow.
I almost look over
That's
my shoulder.
Great.
I mean, it's weird.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Well, listen, great to see you. Thank you for coming in. Have a good day for the rest of it out there in the big wide world of democracy, of course. The House of Lords isn't all bad if Baroness Fox of Buckley
It's completely anti-democratic. Should be abolished. It's just that I'm using it as
she
a platform.
She wants to abolish herself. That's the way we like it here at the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. This is Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Thanks to Claire Fox for that last first half hour of the show. Absolutely brilliant stuff. A lot of people very much appreciative of the common sense that emanates from her, which of course is something that she's famous for, something that we're famous for as well, because we are of course the home of common sense. And I'm delighted to tell you that right now we are welcoming back into Talk Towers, I think for the first time for quite a long time, Robin Schoenhofer. You might remember Robin used to be the queen of news reading here at Talk Towers. She used to read the news on Talk Sport, on Talk Radio. I think she's done Virgin as well. Robin, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Good morning, Mike. It's lovely to see you too. Such a long time.
I know. I mean, I can't even wish to ask you how long ago it was since we saw you, but it's probably a few years, isn't it? Two or three?
I think it's been 3 years now.
Goodness me. And you left to do something which I thought was very admirable at the time, to go and work in the health sector, to retrain as a completely different job. So tell us about what you're now doing.
So now I'm a fully paid up and qualified operating department practitioner. Basically, we work in theatres predominantly in the health service.
Okay.
So that's where I mean, working alongside anaesthetists or surgeon, depending what role I'm doing on what day.
Okay, so you're kind of preparing people for operations and helping out in general. You mustn't have been rather taken aback when suddenly COVID hit the health service, and here we suddenly are 9 months later, 10 months later even, wondering where it's all going to go.
You know what? I actually only qualified last December. So I started my job, my first job in January, and I can't even begin to explain how, what sort of baptism of fire that's been for me. Because obviously I went from January to March, and March was sort of when COVID really kicked off for us, wasn't it? We had a heads up maybe back in February that there was something really bad going on.
Right.
But for you guys, it's March, isn't it, that it really, really hit home?
Yeah. And I mean, for me, my, this is how different you and I's careers are, really, I guess, now, because you're in the eye of the storm, actually seeing it every single day. My remembrance of it is walking out of a place called the Telephone Exchange, which is a bar opposite this this building here.
I know.
For the last time, and thinking, well, I guess they'll be open in about a month, I don't know. And suddenly it was like 3 months later, you know.
I know, and it's been such a bizarre time, hasn't it? I mean, I expected to sort of start my new job and sort of have an almost gentle introduction into the world of working in theatres after training for a couple of years there. And it's just been an absolute baptism of fire for me. And obviously, much like everybody else, I've missed the opportunities to go out to the pub, to see family, friends. It's been really hard. And I think much like everybody else, I certainly have been suffering a bit of fatigue from the relentless lockdowns and restrictions that we're all being placed under.
Yes, I'm sure you have. And was there a time ever at the beginning when we were all kind of very, I suppose, nervous and unknowing about what we were facing? Was there a time when you were worried about your own safety?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think I've actually dealt with COVID patients myself. Mm. So in my role anaesthetically, we assist anaesthetists in putting people to sleep. And I've actually seen a COVID patient close up. So as have many of my colleagues working in the NHS across the country. So to see that, to see the very, very, very worst that can happen to somebody, the very, very, very worst, you naturally would be frightened for your own safety. Especially as, like everybody else, this is something that we've never had to deal with before. We don't, at the time, at the very beginning, we didn't know how it worked. We didn't know how it spread. There were so many unknowns at the very beginning. So we're much further down the road now, obviously. But at the very beginning, yes, absolutely. Very, very concerned for my own safety, but actually for moreover for my parents' safety, because, you know, if you were bringing it home and then visiting them, all of those things, before we had lockdown, before we had the restrictions, those sorts of concerns were very, very real, as they are for everybody else.
Mm, absolutely. And we've got you on today, Robin, because you tweeted out yesterday that you had your first vaccine. Tell us about that. How did it all sort of come about? What did it feel like? And, you know, how are you?
I'm fine. Well, I haven't got three toes on my head.
Excellent.
You know, I'm not zombie, although I'm a bit tired today. Yeah, it's just like getting any other regular vaccine, except perhaps you're asked a few more questions at the beginning. You have a lot of paperwork to fill in at the start for your consent, because consent's really important. Mm. And you have to answer a lot of questions, including about whether or not you've got any allergies. So you spend 15 minutes filling in paperwork, then you go in, you have a brief meeting with a GP who runs through any possible contraindications for a reason why you might not be able to have the vaccine. Then you go through to another room, someone injects you, and then you spend 15 minutes having a cup of tea and a biscuit, a bit like when you give blood, just to make sure that you don't have any sort of immediate adverse reactions that could be dangerous. And then you're off home. And today, I've got a slight ache in my arm. I had it in my left arm, a slight ache in my arm, but actually no worse off than I was when I started yesterday.
Right. And then that's the first of two, isn't it? So you get the second one, what, 3 weeks hence or 4 weeks?
Yeah. Booked in for my second one on the 31st of December. So all being well, I should be fully vaccinated before the year is out.
So happy new year, that will be. We just found out today, or yesterday, I think it was last night, that there's going to be no extra trains being run on New Year's Eve because they don't want anybody going out and celebrating and having a nice time, even though there's no fireworks going on anyway. It's going to be quite weird. I said to my son the other day, it's going to be really good, isn't it, waiting up till midnight for nothing to happen.
I know. Well, I think we just all have to accept, don't we, that New Year's Eve is bust this year, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. London's fireworks, I don't know. Are they spending all the money doing the fireworks and we can just watch them on the TV?
No, they're just not doing them, unfortunately. I'm assuming that we'll be seeing the ones in Sydney and Dubai and Hong Kong, and that'll be it, because we're not doing them here and they're not doing them in Edinburgh either. So, you know, such is life. That's the way it goes. Tell us, Robin, is it what's the sense now in the NHS in terms of the numbers of people that you're seeing coming in terms of the infection rates and all of that? I mean, you're down in Sussex, aren't you? So it's not terrible at the moment, I don't think, down there, is it?
No, we're tier two down here, so we're not sort of on the same level in any way, shape or form as up north in Manchester, those sorts of areas, or even in London at the very, very peak. In terms of how we're dealing with it, it's almost become the new normal, really. At the very, very beginning, it was really tough going into work every day because the advice, the policies, the practices, they would change, not on a daily basis, but twice, two, three times a day sometimes. And you'd start the day doing one thing one way, and then it would be changed by the end of the day. Mm. And that almost as exhausting as, you know, pulling the extra hours in to cover shifts and things. Now we've got it down. We know we have really good pathways for patients coming into the hospitals. And we also have really good ideas of what PPE to wear and when. Mm. So obviously there's been a mixed reaction. You know, we healthcare professionals are still human beings. We still question vaccines, and you absolutely should do your research and make your own choice about whether or not the vaccine is something that you want to go forward and do. But just make sure that you do the research into it and don't just rely on Facebook or Twitter for your information.
Yes.
But yeah, as in terms of healthcare, we are working really, really hard, as you expect. And it's tough, it's busy, but it's the new normal.
Yeah. So you don't miss coming in and talking for a living?
Do you know what? I do a little bit. I do. I'd be lying to you if I said I didn't miss it. And actually, all the way through my training, I was still doing news on a freelance basis because, you know, go to university, you've still got to pay the bills.
Yeah.
yeah, I was really, really excited to be qualified and hoping to keep my hand in. But also, obviously, COVID has kind of put paid to those plans this year. But I am really, really hopeful that I'll be able to just sort of like do the odd news reading shift on a freelance basis in 2021 when we're allowed to sort of move around the country
yes.
a little bit better.
Well, without wishing to upset some of your former colleagues and my news reading team here, I'd be delighted to have you as the exclusive independent Republican Mike Graham newsreader just for this show.
Maybe we could make it happen one day a week. But I know Ross Powell, and Ross Powell is fabulous.
He is.
So didn't want to do him out of a job.
No, of course not. Absolutely not. And you've got your Christmas tree up. So what are you managing to do for Christmas this year?
I am working. I've hit all the shifts. I'm working Christmas Day, Boxing Day, the bank holiday, and New Year's Day. But what else am I going
to
do?
Yeah, exactly, you right. Know? Well, listen, brilliant to see you. And so glad that you're happy doing what you're doing. And it's a wonderful thing you are doing, by the way. So without wishing to, you know, sort of overburden you with praise, it's fantastic. I think that you've left what is very, very easy to do, but not that easy, but to do something actually really worthwhile. So thank you for everything.
Thanks, Mike. And I do miss you guys. I genuinely do.
Well, listen, it's great to talk to you. Great to see you. Robin Schoenhofer, former newsreader here at Talk Towers, Talk Radio, Talk Sport, Virgin. I mean, she did it all. And now, what an amazing thing to do, to leave a relatively cushy number. And I'm not saying that the guys that do that now are doing something which is easy to do, because it's not easy to do, but it's relatively cushy compared to looking after patients, COVID patients in particular, in a hospital ward. So thanks to Robin Schoenhofer and all the people that do what she does. She had the vaccine yesterday. As she said, it's entirely your choice if you want to get the vaccine, but don't just believe what you read on Twitter or on Facebook. And if you want to have some research done, do it properly and make that determination for yourself.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The independent republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
I was talking earlier about my son who's trying to get himself a Saturday job, or who has been trying to get himself a Saturday job, failing miserably in the part of the world in which he lives, just because there isn't anything going. And I've got a couple of tweets here that I want to read out to you. One from Anna, who says, my 16-year-old grandson had a job he loved in a local restaurant just weekends and Friday night. What a good ethic to give a teenager. Get a job, buy their own stuff, have the pride in work. Destroyed by a government that is power mad. Both sides of the house mad. And Simon says, my 18-year-old was doing 40 hours a week washing dishes and serving in our local fish and chip restaurant. That is, until he was laid off in June. And these are the things that people who don't see the arguments about hospitality don't get. Because it's not just about people wanting to go out and have a nice time, wanting to go out for dinner or lunch or going out to the pub and having a pint and a Scotch egg. It's not about that. It's about the work. It's about the people and the people who work in the industry. This morning on the front page of The Sun, gloom at the inn. Just one in five pubs are going to open at Christmas. Nearly 10,000 will shut for good. As many as 290,000 jobs could be lost. It's absolutely extraordinary, and it's terrible. Let's talk to Emma McClarkin, Chief Executive of the British Beer and Pub Association. Emma, very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
I mean, I'm sorry to sound like the bringer of doom and gloom, but I mean, I'm really passionate about this because people are losing their livelihoods, of course, but there's also an awful lot of people who are going to be left behind who do work in pubs and work in restaurants because it's the kind of job that suits them. It's sort of extra work for some people because they need a little bit of extra money. For teenagers, it's a way into the kind of job market. You know, I'm really, really concerned about this.
Yeah, no, and it's not you that's the bearer of the bad news. Unfortunately, those tight restrictions from the government have massively impacted on our trading ability within Tier 2 and Tier 3, or in fact, any tier is actually deeply impacted to the extent of 84% down. So this is extraordinary. Our businesses won't be able to survive, and we haven't taken on the tens of thousands of casual workers that we do at Christmas time, the first job that people have when they're a teenager. Mm. None of that is going to be is there this year, and those businesses are in grave danger of not being there next year.
There really are. And I mean, obviously in Wales and Scotland in particular, it's even worse, isn't it? Because I was reading a story, I think, last weekend, just before the latest sort of shutdown in Wales, where now pubs are not allowed to sell alcohol at all. That something like 40,000 pints of beer were going to be washed down the drain.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you. This is turning into an anti-alcohol lobby. Mm.
What is that about, by the way? Do you think there is something else going on here in terms of, I'm not suggesting that there's some kind of mad conspiracy against drinking, but it seems as though they want to punish people who are trying to sell booze.
The reality is that there's no safer place to drink in moderation than in a pub environment, in a COVID secure pub environment. We've invested 500 million to make it COVID secure. And we know that people drink in moderation and sensibly and socially within that environment. And of course, if you're forcing people not to have that open to them, they will be drinking in a private, unregulated and unsecure environment where they may be drinking to excess. So they're really exacerbating any fears that they had about alcohol. But really, it's very worrying that we're seeing this anti-alcohol lobby coming in. And we only heard yesterday from Sir Patrick Vallance that there was no evidence base for that limitation on our curfew, that they did that on a policy basis, based in and around with an alcohol in the environment.
Yeah.
It is safer to close. Absolutely not. There is no evidence to back that up. And we have lost trade because of it. And people have lost that sort of confidence to come out to the pub.
Well, I think that's true. And I mean, if you think about it, I guess the people who are really suffering here, Emma, are those with, just maybe one pub. I mean, the bigger sort of, brewery organisations have obviously got money to burn, not literally, but I mean, they're able to survive a lot longer without actually making any money. But if you've got just a small kind of, solo owned pub in the middle of somewhere like Durham, and you can't open, it's an absolute nightmare.
It is. I mean, the cash burn effect is huge, and it is creeping up on people, and it will take businesses under if they're not able to open and bring in trade and bring in money to save their livelihoods. People are not asking for anything unreasonable. They've invested an awful lot of money. They've followed sage advice. They put in all these mitigation measures in order to alleviate any of those fears, and yet we still find ourselves singled out as a sector. Unable to open at all in Tier 3, wet lead pubs unable to open. The substantial meal is really, really hammering our businesses. People simply can't afford to be going out for meals just because they wanted to go out for a couple of pints.
Right.
And this is going to really, really take us under this winter.
Right. And have you been able to establish any kind of rapport with anybody in government to try and get a conversation going about what their plan is? Because, I mean, I'm not sure there is much of a plan, to be fair. But, I mean, are you able to at least talk to somebody in the cabinet or in a ministry as to what your concerns are?
We do talk to the government frequently, and we have done. And I have to say, it's getting harder and harder to understand if they're actually listening or understanding how pub businesses are run at this stage. But an awful lot is waiting to see what happens in and around that tier review, which is happening on the 16th.
Yes.
Will people be coming out of restrictive tiers into less restrictive tiers? Will it allow us the opportunity to get more pubs open? We only saw 25% of pubs open. And so we really need to understand how many can get the chance to fight their way through this most bleakest of winters.
Because, I mean, I'm looking at a video right now on Twitter, which has been put up by the West Midlands Police. And it's a video of police officers literally sawing through a corrugated iron sort of blind to get inside a building where they think there's an illegal drinks party going on at a Walsall football club. Meanwhile, we hear that Manchester police haven't been attending 80% of reported crimes because they haven't had the time. I mean, it seems like the world's gone mad. I mean, imagine, you know, using a sort of an angle grinder to get into a building to arrest people for drinking.
I would simply say, allow people to drink safely within our pub environment,
yeah.
and then there won't be these illegal parties. And particularly with the Christmas period coming up and New Year, if they don't find a facility to allow us to open and provide that safe, secure environment for people to celebrate safely, then they will go out and find their new ways of doing it, and that will consume time. But we're also having visits, I have to say, coming into our pubs and actually sort of going around checking on the sizes of substantial meals and how long you've been in a venue. I think this is going way too far.
Mm.
We have very clear guidance, very clear restrictions. It is hammering our businesses, and we really need to find a way that we can save the sector if we want to have the Great British Pub there this time next year.
Exactly right. And is there any hope that over the Christmas period, if nothing else, everyone will be able to open? Because, of course, we've been told that from, I know it's only a short period, but from like the 22nd or 23rd to the 27th. I mean, is that worth anything to people?
We are excluded from allowing festive bubbles to come into our venues. So at this moment in time, we are receiving lots of calls from people, which is very encouraging, saying, can we come and celebrate Christmas with you? And we are not allowed to entertain festive bubbles. And the government could change that, could make us part of that, allowing families to celebrate safely in a much larger COVID-secure space than they have around their
home.
Table.
Yeah.
And we've encouraged the government to do that. They still have a chance to do that before the Parliament rises, to make that announcement, to give us a chance to get some trade in and to allow us to find a way to fight through this pandemic.
Goodness me. Well, they certainly need to do that. We'll see what we can do to help out on that one. Emma, thank you very much indeed. Emma McClarkin there from the Beer and Pub Association of Great Britain, Chief Executive. Isn't that ludicrous? So if you do have your Christmas bubble and you've got, you know, the mother-in-law round and you've got your brother, maybe your sister, their kids and all of that, you can have your Christmas dinner in a very crowded living room, kitchen scenario. But if you wanted to go to the pub, you wouldn't be allowed to. That is absolute madness, isn't it? Completely and utterly bonkers. 0344 499 1000. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got a pub and if you are working and or used to work in a pub, we'd love to hear from you as well. And restaurants, of course, because it is crippling the business. And this is not just about, as I keep saying, going out and enjoying yourself. This is about millions of people who regard the hospitality business, the restaurant business, the cafe business, the pub business, as the place where they make their money, the place where they earn their livelihood. And if they can't do that, they're not just going to be able to walk out and get another job, are they?
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, you'd have to say it's not very often that The Guardian and The Daily Star are similarly imbued with the same type of story. The Guardian doesn't put it on page one, but they've got an interview with Adam Bolton in which he says basically that Sky's credibility is at stake. And he's very, very upset about what his colleagues did by the way of going out for a party for Kay Burley's 60th birthday, even though her birthday apparently is not until December the 17th. She was due to go to Africa. She put a tweet out yesterday to that effect and then withdrew it. She has, to all intents intents and purposes been suspended. Let's talk to Mark Bukowski and just find out how bad this could get for Sky. Mark, a very good afternoon to you.
Hi, Mike. Yeah, well, not good, is it?
It really isn't. I mean, I happen to know a little bit about NBC, only because I know a couple of people that work there, and they have been incredibly hard line about COVID and about the way that they expect people to behave when they work for the company. Yeah. And I knew immediately when this happened that there would be trouble for Kate Burley.
Well, all of them. And actually, what's unfortunate for Sky is that it's their star chamber. I just don't understand, you know, where you're pulling, you know, politicians over the coals, you know, particularly over the Dominic Cummings, you know, sort of Barnard Castle debacle. Mm. And then you can have a complete, you know, a bout of amnesia and go out to Century Club and have a great time with a bunch of mates. You know, everybody's got a phone, Mike, now, and on those phones are cameras, and everybody can capture that sort of moment, which I think was what was the case. But Beth Rigby is a fantastic political voice. I mean, she really has been one of the stars of this. And I think...
Well, she's kind of made herself into one of the stars of it, because at the time when we were all watching the Daily Briefing, you know, I used to actually call them the Three Stooges. It was, you know, Beth Rigby, Laura Kunzberg and Robert Peston. All three of them became sort of like the Three Musketeers, and they were always the first three people that got questions. They were always the people that the people who are not in the media hated the most. And they became, you know... figures, very prominent figures of all sorts of reasons.
It doesn't take a rocket scientist or a brain surgeon to realise that if they were to be grilling an MP who had sort of transgressed, you know, they're just, the MP is going to throw back, or a cabinet minister is going to throw back. So what did you do exactly during the war?
Yeah.
So it's completely undermined their credibility. And again, going back to what I originally said, I just find it incredulous because they're astute people. This is their career. And you know, arguably the Sky audience will say, well, it's all right for the media, media-centric folk who go to private members' clubs and have a great night and completely ignore the rules. Mm. So you're one of them. You're not one of us.
Right.
And Sky and their reporting has been very much one of us. You know, we've wanted to see those scorching sort of zingers coming in from Beth Rigby. And you can't do that. She can't be on the sort of political treadmill any longer, in my opinion.
Well, I agree. I think she's toast as far as that job is concerned, because now, particularly knowing what we know in terms of some of the questioning that she used to do, almost all of it was about locking down more. She was almost always being more enthusiastic about lockdowns than any government minister or any scientist that she was talking to. And here she is, blatantly ignoring it. And you'd have to conclude, would you not, as well, Mark, that this probably isn't the first time they've done it.
Well, I don't, who knows? I can't go that far. I think that would be slightly unfair. I think if this is a moment of madness.
Are you in the Groucho Club? Yeah.
I wish. The indication here is that they've got to start doing something of serious mea culpa here, and you know, trying to find some way of openly discussing what the hell happened. Mm. But it still doesn't take away the fact that they are neutered. They're castrated in, you know, I'm not using that in the sense, but they're neutered in a way that to make them effective, you know, people who can hold truth to power. It's these bubbles, Mike. You know, we're all in a bubble. Let's face it. We all stick to a media. We all hear it from our mates. It's very difficult to break a bubble down. And, you know, someone should have questioned it. And I was due to have a lunch with somebody who is in the public eye tomorrow night. And you know, we had an open conversation to say, well, we can't do it. And it's been in the diary for ages. We can't do it. As much as we want to see one another, you know, this person would be photographed in the place we would have gone, and that person would have been under serious scrutiny, and it would have been a story. So you don't want to be in the centre of headlines. And they are people who don't want this sort of coverage. And I am devastated, you know, because I think they are phenomenal broadcasters. They're phenomenal journalists. And to see this, it's a win for the government. At a time where we need the government to be constantly placed under pressure. I listened to Dominic Raab this morning, sort of using his usual filibustering not to answer a question. And then somewhere halfway towards the end of the interview, there came, you know, the fact that he was actually not being truthful with the facts. But they can't do that now, you know, because, you know, if I was on the other side of, you know, advising politicians, said, well, easy meat here. You just throw mud back at them. And it, you know, debilitates their ability.
I mean, when Adam Bolton comes out and says that basically what has happened has raised issues about the credibility of Sky News' journalism, now you have to think one of two things. He's not doing that, presumably, without any mentioning of it to Sky News. He's being quoted in The Guardian. The Media Guardian got a big piece on it this morning as well. You'd have to assume that Sky have given him permission to say that. Otherwise, why would he say that? And if that's the case, presumably, that makes it look even worse for Kay Burley and Beth Rigby, doesn't it?
Oh, gosh. I mean, for someone as serious as a significant figure of Adam Bolton to proffer his words in this debate is, you know, this is why we're talking about it now. This is why the newspapers have grabbed hold of it. And you're right to say that it's united the likes of The Star and The Guardian together as one. So I think that, you know, and he's obviously worried about his own sort of credibility, and he wants to get across exactly his own values. So there's a lot of people who will be jumping up and down. And I think there'll be various agents out there thinking, there's a couple of good jobs going here.
Yeah.
You know, it's time to push my client forward.
Yeah,
from it, you know?
Because I think the other thing that was interesting, I thought, was yesterday Kay Burley put out a tweet which was in her own inimitable style. Because I've said quite openly before, I quite like Kay Burley, even though a lot of people don't in the public domain out there. A lot of my listeners absolutely detest Sky News, and I don't discourage them from doing that. However, I mean, Kay is what you see is kind of what you get. You know, you've probably met her socially. You know, she's rambunctious. She's out there. You know, she'll tell you what she thinks no matter who you are. And I quite like that about her. However, it would now appear that she has kind of got this all wrong, as it were, because her apology was ridiculous, right, and embarrassing. She then put out a tweet suggesting that she was always going to be going on holiday to Africa, where the lions, you know, hunt for food rather than just for fun. And she was obviously told then to take that down because she obviously didn't quite get how serious this is.
No, I mean, you know, you tweet in error, you think very carefully, because that is your broadcast, you know, your secondary broadcast channel.
Yeah.
And of course you're feeding it. So there was no sense for me of any humility. You're right, you know, she says it as it is and how she feels it, and she's given some, you know, some significant people a right old going over in the past. So of course when you are, you know, when you're that sort of interviewer and you're that sort of type of personality, of course you make lots of enemies, and there's lots of enemies now dancing on a grave, but you do not give them the ammunition to throw back in your face. And it was cryptic, but of course everybody knew what it all meant.
Yeah.
And again, that comes back again to this bubble. You know, this comes back again to the bubble they're in. It wasn't just the fact that it was Kay Burley or Beth Rigby. There was a number of significant people there who should have been questioning the decision to go out. Someone should have helped Kay Burley and just say, look, you know, Kay, well, look, Beth, you know, is this wise?
Right.
You know, let's take a good look at this. So there's a collective thought that this was sort of fine and we'd get away with it.
And also, why go somewhere like the Century Club, which is where there's going to be likely to be a lot of people that you know and a lot of people who will recognise you? Whereas if you'd gone to somewhere like a private club, perhaps it would have been a different ballgame, wouldn't it?
No, it's the same. It's the same. You know, you've got to come out of those clubs onto the public thoroughfare, and any of these clubs they'll probably disagree with me, but certain clubs will be tipping off their paparazzi mates to say, we've got X, Y, and Z in the club tonight, you know. And of course, somebody whizzes along on the back of a scooter and they're hanging around in the cold for hours and hours and hours waiting for that frame. So I think that it's the same thing. If I've always said to clients, you're having a marital sort of issue, don't go to one of the world's most famous restaurants, and you know, which has collectively got a lot of famous people inside and expect to get away with it.
And start hugging people as well, which is extraordinary. I mean, pictures in The Star of Beth Rigby and Kay Burley hugging. You just think, what on earth are you thinking, you know?
Two sherbets. What about one or two sherbets?
Well, listen.
Then we don't think sensibly. I mean, let's fake it. We're mucks mates.
Well, that's the other problem, right? Because that feeds then into the government's view that keeping pubs shut is a good idea, which I certainly don't want them to do.
No, we don't. And I think, you know, even if they're sort of these type of membership clubs, I know one or two are really hurting at this time, really, really hurting. And they're trying to do the best for their staff and the membership and whatever. And it's a terrible day all around. And it's a massive, massive own goal, and which is, it falls right back. I mean, if I was a government spinmeister or a SPAD at the moment, I would be leaping up and down with joy. It would be celebration time, because it's about seeing your star strikers being injured or sent off, is more the case.
But what
sent
would you
off
do
in the first half?
But what would you do if you were John Riley, who's obviously the head of news at Sky?
I really do feel for John. He's a really good bloke. He's a fantastic, fantastic operator, and I don't know what he's thinking. I mean, there's going to be a sort of massive inquiry. I think you've got to take a good, long, hard view.
Well, I imagine it'll be taken out of his hands anyway by the corporate bonds at NBC in New York, because that's what they like to do. But I mean, funnily enough, I wanted to ask you as well just about the whole issue of credibility and news at the moment, because it was only relatively recently, I think, that Kay Burley was boasting that people had lost faith with the BBC, but they trusted Sky News more. And I was watching a BBC 6 o'clock news last night for the first time in ages. I've pretty much given up watching it. And they had this ludicrous piece about climate change, where they interviewed this bloke from the Committee for Climate Change, which I didn't know existed up until now, which turns out to be a government committee which gives government the advice that they want to get about climate change and what the target should be. And it was completely without any sort of challenge whatsoever. All these, you know, of course, this is what we have to do. We have to get to carbon zero. This is how it's going to be difficult, you know. And I'm thinking, you know, there are people watching this thinking this is absolutely and utterly for real, without any challenge whatsoever. So I wonder whether television news in particular has already lost its credibility.
I don't think so. I think that there are horses for courses. I think that, and do you know what? I was listening to a radio program about 6 months ago, and they had a guy from the Flat Earth Society on.
Oh, yes.
And he was debating with someone who obviously from some scientist. And I thought, the Earth's not flat. No. What the hell are you giving of space to someone who's got a lunatic theory just to fill airtime?
Well, I mean, it is quite funny when you get those guys on, I must say. Was you sure it wasn't entertaining?
What a waste of time, though. Well, yeah, it is, but it isn't, because you know, Mike, that some people actually out there will actually listen to that piece and actually think, do you know what? Maybe the Earth is flat. There's a big committee coming up next week
about fake news. Yeah, but hang on.
And social media.
But spreading
these lies.
But Mark, surely the point about that is that you put people on air, on television and on radio, if they have mad theories, in order to expose the mad theory, rather than to pretend that you don't let them on because it's better if nobody hears it. Because in this day and age, you're not going to stop people from hearing the flat earthers just because you don't put them on the telly.
Well, how long have we been hearing about the flat earthers? Surely there's some other crackpot theory that is more relevant that we should be airing out and sort of shooting down. But the point is that, you know, this legislation that the likes of, you know, Twitter and Facebook and Google might face for not being regulated and allowing this spread of fake news. I mean, you know, there's surveys coming up to say that 80% of the news that is fake is consumed and actually has a negative effect, has an effect that actually people believe it and do it because they've lost trust generally across the media.
Yeah.
So if you lose trust, you've now got more and more crackpot theories building up, about some of the maddest things going.
Yeah, but
the trust is gone.
Has gone, Mark. The trust has gone because the TV companies have allowed the trust to go because of their conduct.
I personally agree to disagree on this one, but I think it's more to the level of which the confidence has been lost in the media, and they look at the, you know, cheap fake news and clickbait to draw eyeballs to advertising that is being fed to people because their data is being nabbed by the data scrapers, and the whole thing has turned the world upside down in the sense that we once upon a time in our day, Mike, there was sort of like, there was a set number of channels, a set number of newspapers, there wasn't the craziness of social media, and we could actually believe and trust these people based on that. As soon as this comes and, you know, distorts this and disrupts all this, we've got a world now about where does anybody find the truth? And we've got individuals who are breaking the rules, you know, for birthday parties are part of the problem. Yep. Rather than standing back and saying, to actually be really good. You have to be on message. You have to stick to your values and actually be well researched and helping people with their critical opinion, because we don't teach critical opinion now. So anybody can come up with an idea and it's spread like wildfire, because it's not, people don't believe in the facts anymore, right? They actually look at someone and say, do I actually believe that person? Or does it sound real? We used to, you know, there was a line that the News of the World used to run, which was, you know, when you used to challenge them on a story and say, actually, this is all completely wrong. And I remember a well-known journalist saying to me, it was true at the time, Mark. I think that, you know, that's a problem, is that we are allowing people to get away with it because everybody's desperate for eyeballs and more interesting in eyeballs and clickbait than they are in integrity. And that's where we've got somehow going to draw the line and regulate those who are actually continually spreading this stuff that actually will cost lives.
Mark, thanks very much. We've got to run, unfortunately, because I could talk to you about this all day. But of course, everybody knows where you find the truth. It's right here. It's at Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Right now, though, we're going to take a little trip up into outer space with our favourite outer space expert, Greg Smy-Rumsby from astronomynow.com. Greg, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon to you, Mike.
That's a rather magnificent looking beard you've got on since, I think, the last time we spoke.
It's a festive beard. It's going to, Boxing Day, it won't be there anymore.
Really? Well, that's going to be painful, isn't it? I must admit, I've never actually grown a beard, because partly I'm too frightened of what it would be like to try and get rid of it.
And they sometimes go ginger.
Do
you
they?
Know, you look at them, oh my God, it's ginger.
Right, goodness me. Well, anyway, listen, let's talk about the latest sort of development over in the world of private space exploration. Elon Musk and SpaceX, a remarkable operation, incredible kind of, you know, things that they've managed to do already. But the latest attempt to get up into space didn't go so well.
No, it did. It absolutely did. This is a test program. This, you're obviously talking about his wonderful Starship,
yes,
which is the rocket as well as the heavy lift vehicle underneath.
Right.
The whole thing stands 118 meters tall, which is slightly taller than the Saturn V that took the men to the moon.
Right.
And it can lift more payload, so it can be very, very useful. This was a test program. So it went up in the air, and people thought it might blow up on the launch pad or blow up in going up into the air, blow up when it got to the top of its climb of about 12.5 kilometers. And then it would blow up on the way down, and then it would crash into the ground. The only bit that went wrong is it hit the ground a little hard.
Right.
But that's it.
But it looked very spectacular, didn't it? Because it looked as though it was crashing and burning into flames.
Oh, absolutely. It's because it did have some fuel on board. But yes, effectively, there was a slightly under-pressurized tank at the top of the vehicle that didn't supply enough fuel to the engines underneath to slow it down sufficiently. Mm. But this is a learning curve, and it's all iterations. One iteration, then another iteration. And there's already a Starship waiting on the sidelines to do the job all over again, perhaps more successfully.
Well, this is a very good explanation and indication of the ignorance of people like me who know nothing about space exploration. And whenever I see something blowing up, I just assume it went wrong.
No, not at all. Elon Musk thought it might actually blow up at any time,
right,
during the lift. It's such a big vehicle. It's bigger and bulkier than an A380 aircraft.
Mm. Yeah, which is very big, isn't it? And he's an incredible man, Elon Musk. I'd love to meet him. He has this incredible sort of imagination. Obviously, he hires an awful lot of very good scientists, because so far we've seen him produce a rocket that comes back down and lands on a ship on its own. He's also produced these kind of nets, hasn't he, that catch bits falling from the sky.
I mean, absolutely.
What else is he going to show us that we haven't seen?
Well, he's going to, eventually, we're going to see the end of the Falcon 9 rocket, the one to which you already alluded, suggesting it lands on the ground and also on the ship in the ocean. This Starship is going to basically cut the costs of space travel for anything, not just humans, but for cargo and for capturing all the debris that's in orbit around the Earth, and for going to send space investigative spacecraft to asteroids and the moon and Mars and humans to Mars. This is an amazing adaptable vehicle.
Well, this one we're talking about, Starship. I mean, I think that's, is that not destined eventually when it's ready to head for Mars?
Yeah, absolutely. Elon Musk, his goal is to get to Mars, but there are other versions of Starship. One, for example, will take you round the Earth. So if you want to go from Los Angeles to Sydney, the journey will take you minutes,
really?
not hours. seriously, you can go from, say, London to Los Angeles, and it'll probably take you around about 35 to 40 minutes.
That's incredible. So does that mean...
Is incredible.
How fast would you... would you actually be going faster than the speed of sound then? Presumably you would.
Oh, yeah, a lot faster than the speed... You're going to be travelling almost into orbit. You will go into space.
Right. So you go up and come back down again.
In their seats will be astronauts.
Mm. Goodness me. And I wonder what the effect of that on your body would be, though, because we're not really designed to go that quick, are we?
No, but it you wouldn't notice it. Everybody was in Concorde, weren't they? And they were sitting there. And it's just more of the same. It's a little faster, admittedly. It's not going to affect you. You're not in space anywhere near long enough to warrant any kind of change.
I think I'd be asking for no windows in that scenario, because I've been on planes, right, which have gone very quickly. And I remember once being on a particular flight from coming back from Dublin to Prestwick in Scotland. And because it was running late, it was a Ryanair flight, they started going faster. And I wasn't sure if it was my imagination, right? And I was looking out the window and I was thinking, this plane seems to be like really, really like racing. And I actually asked the stewardess and I said, is this plane going quicker than normal? And she said, well, it is, because the pilots made the decision to basically use more fuel rather than pay the fine for landing at a later time. And we were doing something like 150 miles an hour faster than normal, and it was quite frightening. I mean, it was I was going, God, I wasn't quite sure.
The thing about the Starship, though, is you've got 100 people sitting at the top of it.
Yeah,
100 people, not two or three as you normally associate with spaceflight.
Right.
100 people. You can stick the whole of the space station without its solar panels. You can pretty much fit the whole of that space station inside the cargo bay of Starship. I am exaggerating a little, but you can clearly see that this is a very large rocket.
Mm, excellent. Well, before we let you go, Greg, tell us if there's anything we should be looking out for. It's a bit gloomy at the moment, but skies are clear at the weekend, what can we see?
Oh, the moon. Get up early. I mean, it isn't that early because the sun doesn't rise till fairly late. Look over in the east, the southeast, and you'll see Venus close to the horizon, and you'll see the moon closing in on Venus quite quickly each day. So the sort of 9th, that's sort of today, 10th, 11th, and even the 12th, a very, very, very thin moon. It'll be glorious to take cameras. Make sure you've got a camera to take a photograph of it.
Okay, and we shall try and do that. Well, delightful to see you as ever, Greg. Thank you very much indeed. Greg Smyer-Rumsby, our favourite space expert, explaining to me exactly what happened. Apparently, when something crashes into the ground and bursts into flames, it's not necessarily a bad thing. That's taught me, certainly.
Talk radio across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.